Hello and welcome to Reading the Game, the podcast where baseball fans discuss the baseball books they love. This is episode 19, in which we'll be talking about Baseball for Kids, a Young Fan's Guide to the History of the Game by author Adam McKinnon. I had a chance to chat to Adam way back in April about his writing process, how he writes for children and how it differs from writing for adults. And the next thing you hear will be me talking to Adam about the book. So let's get on with the show. Right. Hi, Adam. Thanks very much for joining us.
Of course. Happy to do it.
I've been listening to your podcast, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later in the chat. And one of the things that you do, which I absolutely love, is your opening questions for your guests, where you ask them to tell you their origin story. I'm going to adapt it for our podcast. And going forwards, I'm going to do this with all my guests. But I'm going to ask you to tell us, what is your favorite baseball book?
My favorite baseball book was actually one that I read a few years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago. It was called Smart Baseball, written by Keith Law, who was the I credit as the writer who kind of got me into analytics and the more cerebral side of the game. It really kind of opened my eyes a little bit to a different way of thinking about it. And I can appreciate any book that takes a subject you already love and then sort of makes you look at it from a different angle. So Smart Baseball, Ahead of the Curve by Brian Kinney gets an honorable mention because I read them both back to back. And
they're both quite similar books as well, aren't they, really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. They're both excellent books. I want to talk about your book, if that's okay. I want you to kind of dig into a little bit about how you came to write the book. It's the first time we've ever spoken to anyone who's written a children's book, so I think it's quite exciting to hear about it. How did you come about writing a book, and was it something you've always wanted to do?
So writing a book is something I've always wanted to do. I was actually, believe it or not, I was actually approached to write the book from a publishing company who I had been writing on my website, Romantic About Baseball, for a couple of years to very small audiences. It was really just a thing for me. And they approached me about writing this particular book. And I had just recently, had a daughter and it was a very sort of coincidental approach, I guess you could say, because I was always as soon as I had her, of course, I'm thinking, oh man, I would love to introduce her to baseball somehow, you know, when she gets older. But you don't think about it as a parent, you don't think about, oh, introduce baseball when they're 5, 6, 7 years old. It's when they're older in life. So, it was a very welcome approach. And so when they came to me to write it, I jumped at the chance.
How much research did you have to do? Because we were talking off air, weren't we? Like, one of the things I love about the book is its balance. There's loads in there. It's very comprehensive, but at the same time, you kind of don't delve too deeply into any specific thing. So how much research did you have to do specifically for the book?
Well, there was a fair amount of research. When the publishing company came to me, they gave me a very sort of broad, rough, like, you know, this is what we want. These are some of the subjects we want to tackle. And thankfully, I was in the midst of doing a lot of research on my own. So it's really just the research was making sure that the dates were right, making sure that the subjects were worthwhile and digestible for younger kids. You know, it's one thing to know, about Babe Ruth. You know, and there's so much there. There's so much to unpack. But the the research was really about how do I take this huge story, right, and then break it down so in a way that's not overwhelming, because the goal is to get a young person interested, not to make it feel like a homework assignment.
Sure.
So that was probably the bulk of the research was picking a topic and then taking all the layers that were there and sort of like peeling them back in a way that was digestible for someone that maybe doesn't have the attention span or maybe even the interest right away.
I think in the sense that you mentioned about that, like in terms of the subject matter,
I really like how balanced it is. It's very broad. It's great to see information in there about the Negro Leagues, about integration, about the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, about popular Black, Jewish, Hispanic players. Like, how did you decide what to include? Was there anything you couldn't include because you thought you didn't want to go into that? Like, I really, there's a really pointed reference to cheating slugger. You know, there's a section on sluggers and home runs, and there's a reference to how some people thought they were cheating. And like, how did you want to expand on things that you felt like you couldn't because of the audience?
Yeah, there were a couple things. The Negro Leagues in particular, one of the biggest sort of hurdles that modern baseball face is accessibility in communities of color and, you know, inner city communities here in the United States. And so my goal is, if you're trying to expand your audience, you want to, and not just for my book, but to expand baseball's audience, you know, a young person wants to see themselves. They want to see, they want to see themselves in the book. They want to see themselves represented. And if you don't do that enough, then they don't feel as connected to it. So I would have loved to expand it on the Negro Leagues. I would have loved to expand more on I can't think of a better word, but the sort of surge of Latino and Hispanic players in the 90s, you know, as they came up. And of course, yeah, I mean, when it came to like the cheating and the steroids, that was something I really wanted to scale back on, because you also don't want to, you know, it's supposed to be like a way to, for people to enjoy it, you know,
an introduction.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, putting those sort of negative connotations in there, they need to be discussed, but not necessarily dwelled on.
So how does that compare then? Like, you've written a fair amount for adult audiences. You mentioned your own site, and I know you've done some writing for other sites. How does it compare writing for children versus writing for adults?
It's really hard. I'll be honest with you. That this was, you know, this was for sure the biggest challenge, my editor was very often like, hey, you know, we got to take the vocabulary down. We got to make the sentences. The things that I thought were no-nos, like redundant, or, you know, are actually things that sometimes I think kids want, you know, repetition and, you know, sort of easing them into subject matters. So that I found it to be a lot more difficult than most other writing I've done.
And do you think it's changed the way that you write now for adults as well? Has it had an impact on the way that you communicate your ideas in your general writing?
I don't know that I can pinpoint it right away. I mean, I have tried to be more concise, you know what I mean? Like, more straight to the point, you know, but I don't know that those changes have quite taken root just yet.
Okay. Well, I suppose it's something for you to kind of keep an eye on as you go forward as well with your writing, isn't
Definitely.
It?
I mean, you know, the ratio of my experience is so heavily weighed on the adult audience, but I think that the sort of effects of writing for kids, I think that I'm sure that when I look back on this, I will be like, oh, well, that's clearly a change from the book.
So you mentioned that you were approached by the publishing company to write the book, and you mm-hmm. had some ideas, and you started to kind of put them down. You started to think about what you wanted to include. How long did it take you to put the book together in entirety?
So I signed on in September, I think, sometime around there. And from there, the writing was done by November, and then it was just editing, going over design and things like that.
Okay, cool. So it's not, I mean, it's quite quick, quite a quick turnaround.
Yes.
And the book, I mean, for our UK listeners, the book hasn't actually arrived here in the UK yet. I don't know if that's affected by the current situation, like surrounding deliveries and that kind of stuff, but it's just come out in the States, right?
Well, it's about, what's today? It's roughly about 2 weeks away from actually the on sale date.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. So again, we spoke a little bit off air, but the thing I really like about the book is how fun it makes baseball seem. And this is going to sound like a slightly strange thing for a fan of a sport to say, but I think sometimes we do actually need reminding just how fun the game baseball is, you know. Like, there are sections in the book on traditions, on ballpark food, on take me out to the ball game, the atmosphere at games, and like loads and loads of little fun facts that I would probably forget to mention if I were trying to explain why I love the game to people. Like, you definitely get the sense that this is the case, but did you write the book from the point of view of wanting to sell the game as a fun thing to a newcomer?
Yeah, you could say that. I think my goal is, you know, baseball is a sport built on the micro tradition. It's built on unwritten rules. It's built on things that if you don't know to look for it, you won't see it. You know, if you show a younger kid a game where people stand still, you know, 80% of the time, then you're going to look over at soccer, you know, you're going to look at American football, you're going to look at hockey, and you're going to say, oh, well, this is action all the time. Baseball, from when you're on the field, you know, the rituals of the pitcher in between pitches, the way that the fielders move right when the ball is thrown, the way that the base runner, you know, it ticks left or right, you know, those to me, I find like utterly fascinating, you know, the chess match between the batter and pitcher. Right. But, and then to the stands, you know, the smell of beer and hot dogs and all that in the air. Like, these are things that someone who already appreciates the game really connects with, you know. But someone who's never done it before, they're not understanding it. You know, I love my wife is an excellent sport, right? She's been to a lot of baseball games with me, and you know, there will be times where I'll be explaining, you know, I'll just get super excited. Like, my eyes are glued to the field. Like, oh, this slider's coming. I know he's throwing him two fastballs. He's going to throw him a slider. You know, look at the way the base runner moves. He just stole second standing up. I can't believe it. I saw Mike Trout do that in a game once in Atlanta. I was like blown away. And my wife's like, okay, he just stole second base. It is. So the goal is of the book to bring it to an audience that either has never seen a game, doesn't know a game, but when they watch it, they already kind of have, it's like reading the book before watching the movie.
Sure.
You know, if you read the book, you kind of have some background.
But how do you go about that? Cause you know, you've just waxed lyrical for like 2 minutes on all of that nuance, all of that stuff that we as fans appreciate, right? That we from spending time enjoying, consuming the sport and everything about it, we kind of get that. It kind of just seeps into us. But how do you go about communicating that nuance, first of all, in the written word, and second of all, to people who are completely new to the sport or to people who haven't had that much exposure to the sport?
Sure. The first part was from the, you know, try to break it into two parts, like from the stands. Okay. We talked about like something tactile, something they can see, something they can say, oh, well, hot dogs. Okay. You know, one of those pages in the book is when did they start, you know, questions in the book, you know, when did they start selling hot dogs at stands? No one really knows. There's no actual origin story of it. So when you actually go into it, like a young fan can go to the game and that's something they remember from the book. Like, oh, no, guess what? No one knows. You know what I mean? And from the other end of it is you try to give them little things that they can connect. You know, you try to give them, like we talk about historical figures and in the book. And when they hear or they're at a ballpark and something flashes on the screen or they're watching a game with their parents and something, this is the first person to do this since Frank Robinson. Well, there's a page in the book about Frank Robinson. And suddenly that young person is able to connect the past to the present. So that's really what we tried. The mission was just to kind of give them little things they could grab onto.
It really works because my 6-year-old daughter has kind of read through it. She hasn't read the whole thing, but she's kind of read through it. And the things that piqued her interest were all of those little peripheral things, all of those things around the outside of the actual action, mm-hmm. that we love about baseball. Like we were really lucky. We were able to, in London, we had the Yankees and the Red Sox series last summer.
It's quite a series.
Yeah, it was fantastic. But it was a fantastic opportunity to take my daughter to her first game on the Sunday. It was an afternoon game. And surprise, surprise, she wasn't that excited about the actual on-field action, right? Apart from anything else, the only tickets we could afford to take the whole family to were like pretty high up in the gods. So we were quite far away from the action. And she was slightly disinterested by the actual on-field action. But as soon as we started walking around the ballpark, as soon as we started kind of taking in other sights and sounds and her seeing that side of things, she was much more engaged. She was much more interactive with all that kind of stuff. And then those were the things that she really picked up in the book, because those obviously made me realize that the seed had been planted in her head with that game that we took her to last summer. And then her seeing your book and reading all about all those traditions and all those things, they were things that she could relate to from having experienced them herself. So it definitely works. It's a really clever book. I really think you should be proud of yourself. I really enjoyed reading it. And what I was going to ask you is as a father yourself, you know, have you yet started to introduce your daughter? I think she's a little bit younger than my daughter. Have you started to introduce her to baseball yet?
She's 2.5, and we try to keep a tight lid on screen time, but every once in a while I'll just, you know, I've got some like games and stuff that I'll, you know, without baseball being played currently, I'm watching a lot of baseball on YouTube. And so if a clip, you know, happens to come up, I'll leave it on for a little bit, just kind of see how she reacts to it. She's a little young to kind of take it in right now, but I also know that this is the age that they're starting to form memories. So I'm trying to get in there at the ground level. I'm trying to implant baseball at the ground level.
And how does it compare? So how did you come to baseball? Was it something that you got into because of your parents?
It was. My dad was, so I was born in Atlanta, but then I moved around quite a bit until I was in my, you know, I guess you could say my early, maybe like middle school. I guess in America, we call it like middle school, which is like 9 or 10 years old. And it's elementary leading into middle school. And so my dad, I was a Braves fan because I'm from Atlanta, and my dad was a Braves fan. And it was probably like 1992, 1993, somewhere in that range. We've narrowed it down to those 2 years, somewhere in there.
Great time to be a Braves fan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I distinctly remember he took me to my first game. It was at Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, which we talk, you know, I talk about it in the book, but, you know, for the adults, Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia was an awful stadium. It was a garbage dump of a stadium, but I have great affinity for it now in my later years. So I remember going, and I just remember the expanse of it and how huge it was and everything. And that's really where I liked baseball before. And that was where I really kind of became a lifer.
Sure. Well, because the reason I asked you is just because I was kind of interested to try and poke at how you felt about introducing your own, you know, your own daughter to baseball, having been introduced to it by your parents, and how that might compare. But it kind of leads me on to my next question, really, which is kind of a bit more about the sport itself and less about the book. But one of the things that we always hear as baseball fans is how the sport is in decline, how, you know, the audience is aging, and how we need to make efforts to kind of shorten the game, make it more appealing to a younger demographic. But as someone who's just written a book for young people, like, how appealing do you think the sport is for the young fan in 2020 compared perhaps to, like, when you said the early 90s, 92, 93, when you first started watching baseball? How do you think the sport compares for young people now and then?
Well, I think it's in a transition period right now. I think in the 90s, you know, baseball games were network television events, and you could watch it, you know, TBS was, Turner Broadcasting Station was all over the country. So there's an entire generation of people that aren't from Atlanta that are Braves fans because TBS and WGN. Like, I grew up, and when you came home from school, WGN was the Cubs were on. And then late at 7 o'clock, the Braves came on. Now it's very, it's been a little bit tribalized, you know, with television contracts and things like that. So it's not as accessible. But where I say it's in a, it is in a bit of a decline, but the transitional period is that in my, you know, generation, I didn't even know what Mark Lemke, my favorite player, I didn't even know what his voice really sounded like. You know what I mean? Because you might get a couple of minutes in the post game interview, you know, but Lemke wouldn't get any post game microphones. So for me, what I think baseball has done successfully so far is they've leaned on the accessibility to players. And if players continue to kind of break off of the script, as I like to call it, you know, I love guys like Bryce Harper and Francisco Lindor and guys that don't talk in cliches. That's what's going to make it accessible to young people. That's what's going to bring the next generation of fans in is you know, having people explain to them, like, you know, in plain English, this is why this game is so awesome. This is why, you know, it's so great. So so I think that's probably, I would agree that it's probably been in a little bit of a decline, but you know, pre-coronavirus, you know, I guess I would say before all of this, I would say that we're kind of on the way back up a little bit, and it's thanks to, you know, appealing to younger people with players that speak in plain English and look like them and you know, and play like they're having fun.
Yeah, cool. I think you've got one of the, you know, there are some really exciting young ball players at the moment. You've got one of the most exciting young players playing at Atlanta right now. So, you know, yeah, things are looking good. It's cool that you're going to be able to take your daughter to games and see some really exciting baseball. So that's,
I took her to one already. She was nine months old. And we carted that young lady into the stands. It was 100 degrees in Atlanta. we sat under the high risers, cause you know, we're not monsters. And we sat there and she took it all in. It was great.
Awesome. That sounds cool. I want you to talk about your podcast a little bit, because I'm a newcomer to the podcast, but I've been like frantically trying to catch up over the last few weeks, and I've really enjoyed particularly the Eric Nussbaum episode. His book just sounds completely fascinating, and I'm really excited to read it. I haven't got a copy yet, but I really enjoyed that episode. And of course, I really enjoyed listening to you guys talking to Joey, Baseball mm-hmm. Brit. Can you tell us a little bit about the podcast and how it all goes?
Sure. The podcast was born out of me doing it. There's a couple episodes somewhere in the internet cosmos of just me doing it by myself for like 20 minutes. And this is back when the website had no traffic, no visitors. It was just a thing for me. And what I did was, at one point, I was trying to get the writing more, you know, spotlighted. So I started just messaging people on Twitter, read my stuff. And Jim Passan, my co-host, was gracious enough to not just read it, but get back to me. And after we started talking a little bit, we just decided we hit it off pretty well. So we started the podcast. And then at that point, it was just anyone that'll talk to us. We go through a few episodes, kind of get our legs under us, and thankfully, since then, we've been able to kind of target some folks in particular. You know, I like to talk to folks that have a more cerebral point of view, that have a sort of legacy in the game. Dan Szymborski was a guest, and he was just awesome to talk to. Rob Nyer was great, and so we like to talk to folks. I would almost call it like a talk show, where we like to long form interview folks for, you know, roughly about an hour, and talk about their experiences in the game. You know, it's not often, you know, I was telling you, I don't do a lot of these on this side of the microphone. And sometimes we don't think, like, writers and stuff like that, you know, they're not always on this side. So I like to take people that are normally on one side of the mic and maybe put them on the other.
Well, it's really cool. I really, really enjoy. I've really enjoyed listening to it. You really do get a sense of warmth, like, and there's a really good sense of connection that you get. All of the ones I've listened to so far, I've really enjoyed. So keep up the good work. Listen, I'm going to draw things to a close. I really want to give you an opportunity to let everyone know, first of all, where they can get the book, and if you can tell them where they can get it in the States, then I can tell them where they can get it in the UK, and And then also, I'd really like it if you could tell them where they can get in touch with you on social media, if possible, or also, you know, where they can get the podcast from.
Yeah, no, that's great. I appreciate it. So you can get the book on Amazon, of course, IndieBound, Barnes & Noble. Those are probably the biggest three here in the States. I particularly would like to, you know, nudge IndieBound because they do work with independent bookstores, to me, an essential, you know, link in the chain of society. So, you know, those are probably the biggest three outlets here in the States.
Cool. And the podcast?
The podcast, you can find it. So we're hosted on SoundCloud. You can Google it. It comes up. But you can also get it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. Pretty much, I think, and then there's a couple other, Podknife is another one. Pretty much any major outlet, if you don't see it on your favorite podcast outlet, reach out to me directly and I will put it on there. The Twitter handle is probably the most primary way that I communicate via social media. It's at RMNTC baseball. So like romantic without any vowels and then baseball. And then my personal one is at Adam, ADAMC, MACK, Adam C Mac.
Okay, cool. I mean, if you haven't, if you should definitely get in touch. You should definitely give the podcast a listen, but and definitely give. God, I'm really bungling this. You should definitely I'm going to try it again. And by the wonders of editing, I'll be able to edit this down. Right. You should definitely read the book, buy the book, read the book, and listen to the podcast because that's what I've done and I've enjoyed everything. So, thanks very much for coming on. Thanks very much for talking.
I'm happy to do it. Thank you so much.